I'm Dominic Cavendish. With me are Charles Spencer, lead critic for The Daily Telegraph, Mark Shenton, reviewer for The Sunday Express, and the critic David Benedict. This week, Charles Spencer devoted almost the entire review of Life is Rhythm, a tap-dancing and drum-bashing extravaganza from Barcelona, to unleashing a broadside assault on the current state of the West End. You can read the article in full at www.telegraph.co.uk, but here's an excerpt. The place, he wrote, is engulfed with brain-dead rubbish, stand-up comedians, back catalogue compilation musicals, one-woman shows, and any amount of tacky tat. He continued, at the time of year when the commercial theatre is normally opening its major shows, there is just a single new serious play on offer, Shared Experiences' Portrait of the Novelist Jean Rhys, after Mrs. Rochester, all of which points, he suggests, not just to a dearth of seriously entertaining fare right now, but the prospect of a cultural desert in the West End of the future, as discerning audiences give up on the commercial sector altogether. The crisis point, he writes, is dangerously close at hand. David Benedict, this isn't really just a subjective take on the calibre of shows, is it? The facts speak for themselves. If you remove the subsidised sector from the equation, then London's theatrical pickings look alarmingly thin.
I think that's absolutely true. It's not, obviously, a golden age in the West End at present. I mean, you'd have to be a particularly buoyant and possibly blind producer to believe that. On the other hand, there's a famous analysis that Kenneth Tynan made of the state of the West End in 1957, which pretty much comes to the same conclusion. I mean, the tat that he was listing is different tat 45 years later, but pretty much he's going, where are the good plays? Actually, there's just light rubbish and poor musicals. The West End is in a parlous state of decline. It's all going to be over by next Tuesday if we're not careful. So I'm tempted to say it was ever thus.
Plus ça change, you think. Well, of course, Tynan was writing at a time when there wasn't a huge subsidised sector sort of producing plays by the dozen. Maybe he had a bigger reason to gripe then, or worry then. But Mark Shenton, do you agree with Charles Spencer's analysis that things perhaps do look a bit ropier than they have done?
Well, of course, Tynan was writing before the National was even founded, so that it's a different landscape that we've got now. But having said that, I think it's what the West End is doing now, what it's always done, which is trying to make money. That's its first and only objective in some ways. But I kind of think, well, crisis, what crisis? Because if you look at it, it's actually more healthy than usual. We've got a David Hare play coming in, Tom Stoppard's on the boards soon, Powell Pinter, Arthur Miller, Oscar Wilde, Shakespeare even, in the West End. When the subsidised theatres like the RSC don't even come to London anymore, we actually do have quite a wide range of things. Yes, there is some tat, but there always has been. It's no different.
Charles Spencer, that's you want. I don't know what you want to kind of take that on board, but I mean, presumably, I mean, we all tend to exaggerate sometimes to make a point, and I don't know whether you think you've had to exaggerate to make this point.
Well, I think I was taking a snapshot of what was on that particular week, and obviously there is a hair coming in, though it's not been announced yet. What Shakespeare is the
Midsummer Night's Dream, the comedy, acclaimed by us all.
Yes, all right, fair enough.
quite an old show, I think, by now.
Yes, I mean, we've already seen it, but I'm delighted it's there.
We've already seen it, but the public haven't. Yeah. They need to see it.
Yeah, I think what I was really griping about is that it's the sort of level of mindlessness of what the producers are bringing in, and was particularly brought on by this Bill Kenwright production. God knows what he was doing there for 20 performances of these Catalan tap dancers, but it was just rubbish, you know, and they'd be presumably charging West End prices for it. Then there was the debacle of Michael Barrymore, you know, a man who was just not ready to come into the West End. Wyndham's probably the best theatre for new writing, or, you know, for serious drama, right through till Christmas, is now being given over to stand-up comics, which strikes me as a very dangerous symptom. And we've got the threat of another of these ghastly Ben Elton compilation shows. You know, I love pop music, but when Ben Elton gets his hands on them, he turns it into more crap.
I mean, that's a very salient point, isn't it, Mark Shenton? I mean, if you look at musicals in the 80s, I mean, musicals are the great driving force of the West End. Something like 56% of attendances in the West End in 2001 were for musicals, whereas only 28% were for plays. And we're facing a dearth of really interesting new musicals. I mean, one can obviously cite Jerry Springer, the opera. With the exception of that, there's not very many people rejuvenating the form in this country.
Well, with musicals are a tricky subject. In order to make their money, they have to run a very long time. And of course, we've got a landlock on lots of musicals, like Les Miserables and Phantom, who've been around forever and continue to hog those houses. So there, in fact, are very few theatres which are suitable for big new musicals, if they're being written. I mean, there are good shows out there in New York. The producers, Hairspray, still to come here. They're having trouble casting the producers. Those are specific local problems. I'm sure they'll overcome them and the show will come here. I don't think there's a crisis at all. Neither musicals are what... I mean, We Will Rock You, we all, critically, we universally loathed. However, I went to see a recent performance, didn't see the whole show, but the crowds were absolutely lapping it up. And I think, it's not for us to necessarily say what should be playing in the West End. But if the crowds like it, then it's fulfilling its brief. That's what the West End's for.
Surely there's a finite amount of compilation musicals you can fling at the public before they start saying, hang on a minute, I've got all these albums at home, I really don't need to spend 50 quid.
I think there's another misunderstanding here. The point is that maybe shows like We Will Rock You should not be attended by people like us, because actually they're not there as theatre, they're there as fan events. There will be as many compilation shows as there are bands with big enough back catalogue, and basically people that are going to We Will Rock You are Queen fans. Anyone interested in serious theatre is going elsewhere. They may be off to see The Price, or they may go and see something more avant-garde like Jerry Springer. They're going to We Will Rock You because they want to hear the Queen numbers. They will go to Tonight's the Night because they want to hear the Rod Stewart back catalogue, etc, etc. All those shows will do that. The West End in many ways is getting to a degree what the public wants. I think the problem is that In an economy that's been falling, because of 9/11, there's no tourist industry, nothing opened in the West End in the spring because nobody was going to see the shows that did open. As a result, producers have not got pockets that are endless. They've got a bunch of investors that they want to invest in shows that they think will be successful. I think that if there is a crisis in the West End, it's because sites have been lowered to the point where risk-taking, which is what producing is all about, is now a really, really vexed question. And most of the risks that are taken are very, very slim ones. And the way out has been for producers to go, all right, I'll do a play that's a little bit offbeat, like Kenneth Lonergan's This Is Our Youth, which frankly I don't think many people would have looked at, but everybody went to see it because it had Jake Gyllenhaal, Hayden Christensen and Anna Paquin in. And then the producers, Anna Waterhouse and Claire Rance, have then made sure that they kept that caliber of casting up, and now they are in a position to produce in the West End all sorts of more interesting plays because they've shown that risk can work if it's managed properly.
I think the other thing about this is that you can have good and bad back catalogue shows. I mean, I think all of us really like Mamma Mia, and
absolutely,
it wasn't
just
because Mamma Mia was ABBA and we prefer ABBA to Queen, though in fact that is the case, that's my view. But basically, Katherine Johnson took great trouble with that book and turned out a really neat, heartwarming piece of work. Whereas Ben Elton, you felt he'd cobbled it all together in a couple of afternoons because it got his name on it and Queen, it didn't matter.
Absolutely.
And in fact, actually, the reason the Queen show is a big hit, I was talking to someone about this, it's quite interesting, it was doing very badly.
It nearly came off,
and what did it was Brian May paying up on the roof of Buckingham Palace at the Jubilee Party. That's the only reason it became a hit.
All that free publicity.
Yeah, and... It's a garbage show, and the thing is, I think our job as critics is to try to raise standards, but right across the board. So I don't think we should be snobbish about compilation shows, but I think we should say, yes, there are good ones and there are bad ones, and I think, that Queen's fans are being shortchanged on this one. I also remember, I had a one of the strangest experiences I've ever had, sitting in the Bush, the Fringe Theatre, which is terribly crowded, and I was sitting at the back, and there were these two people in front of me, and one or other of them obviously got money in We Will Rock You, and he said, I couldn't believe the reviews. That Charles Spencer said he wouldn't even have the Queen record to pollute his collection. So I just shivered here, and I don't like Queen, but I can see that a lot of people do. But why couldn't we have a sort of decent, witty book rather than just this sort of Ben Elton on cruising along on autopilot as he so often does? And I think the tragedy is with Ben Elton, and I think it's the same with his plays, is I think he's got the the potential to be a really great popular writer, and Absolutely. He never takes out that makes that last 10% of effort, you know. And he's lazy in the way that he's one of these people who does so much, so he doesn't have to do anything well. I think
before we move on to discussing what is happening in new writing, one really cool area where people identify buzz or lack of buzz in the West End musicals. Do you not think, Mark Shenton, though, there is a sort of ticking time bomb here? You've got these old warhorse musicals, the great British musicals. At some point, they've got to bite the dust. Don't you think we should really be crying out now for something serious to replace it?
Well, the New York syndrome is that they've gone through the entire back catalogue of revivals, and there's actually nothing left to revive. And in fact, they're reviving the revivals, as it were, or reviving shows that were done 15 years ago, which is way too soon. Or in our case, Anything Goes, which was seen in the West End 15 years ago. But I think when producers take the risk, they sometimes take the wrong risk. I mean, the Jacobean season, for all the acclaim we gave it, it lost Bill Canwright and Thelma Holt £1.1 million. And then other producers, putting McKellen into Dance of Death, or Ray Fiennes into Brand, Patrick Stewart into Master Builder, Kristen Scott Thomas into Three Sisters, you might get an audience in for those, but you're luring them in to see those stars and to see the wrong play. They might come and see that and never go to the theatre again. They'll be so bored out of their minds.
Well, those plays have been enjoyed, I think, by the audiences that saw
Three Sisters, yes. I'm not sure that anybody enjoyed Brand particularly, who, you know, if you went to see...
I love Brand. I thought it was the best of the three myself.
Well, it may be the case that the West End isn't there to present high art, and I think most people would regard Ibsen, if you want to use that crude term, high art, they would regard Ibsen as a fairly serious night out. But, I mean, let's look at the other premise about playwriting, which is that, you know, every week you can go to these rather small little theatres that have got huge amounts of public funding behind them, and if you're lucky, you can get in and see some rather good shows. If you go to the Cottesloe, if you go to the Royal Court, you can see, by and large, really interesting new writing.
Yes.
But it doesn't transfer to the West End, which leaves you with this gaping void, as far as I can see. Charlie cites in his write-up that, you know, Alan Ayborn, Simon Gray, Peter Nichols, Michael Frame were all the staple diet, really, of West End, Shaftesbury Avenue playwriting at one point. And now you can't see these people for dust, and additionally, you can't see young playwrights filling their shoes. What's going on there?
Well, all those people used to be, their first option would have been a West End run. Now their first option is a National Theatre run.
Yeah.
And therefore the commercial producers don't stand a chance. They don't get a chance to look at those plays unless they get the rights to transfer them.
I think the big story actually is that the National Theatre is kind of upsetting, in a way, by its own success, the ecology of the rest of the
theatre.
Yes,
exactly.
In that, you look at the two big musicals opening this autumn, Anything Goes and Jerry Springer, both started at the National.
Yes.
Both started, I think, with £10 tickets available, and basically they're just hoovering everything up. And
yes.
I think what the commercial producers now are doing is they're either desperately trying to hitch their wagon to the National and transfer like Noises Off or something like that, or they just haven't got a clue what they're doing, and they're just kind of booking anything as long as it's not going to bankrupt them. You know, you've got Bill Kenwright next week opening again, Wait Until Dark, for Christ's sake. You know, this ancient thriller, you know, he did Dial M for Murder a few years ago. I mean, it's pathetic.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is that, you know, it's a very, very difficult, complex economy. The reason that the Bill Kenwright show is currently on at the Lyric is because he's got that theatre. Every night that theatre is dark, he is losing money because you have to pay staff, you have to pay the contra deals. There's a lot of money involved, so he's desperately looking for something to put in. The managements that are looking to new work are absolutely getting their work tried out at the National. They're, you know, it's like what used to happen with musicals out of town in America, where you open West Side Story in Washington and you play New Haven and Philadelphia, and then when you fixed it, you bring it into town. And that's what happens now. Joe Orton used to go straight to Michael Codron. If Joe Orton was still around and writing plays, he'd be doing it at the Court and bringing it in, or doing it at the National and bringing it in, because that way you get to iron out the problems. But the problem, for, I think, for managements is that sometimes it runs at those places for a long time. All the brouhaha is built up. It creams the booking audience off the top, and then it's very, very difficult to take a show into town because no newspaper wants to write about it because, oh, we've already reviewed that. It's all dead. So you have to have advertising budgets as long as your arm in order to actually promote the work, to get it to an audience that might want to see it.
I can see the arguments behind that, but then if you look at the West End in around circa 1997, 98, and you had this explosion of new writing going on at the Royal Court, and some of this stuff, admittedly the Royal Court was in the West End at that point, so it had a presence and it was attracting a young audience. But, you know, some of this stuff, Mark Ravenhill's Shopping and Fucking is one example, and Patrick Marber's Closer is another, this was actually taking in West End audiences, people who'd not necessarily been to a new play for quite a while.
Absolutely.
And so why is it that now the Royal Court is not presenting this kind of fare in the West End? Is
it
that
the Royal Court would if they could?
Exactly.
I mean, desperately looking around. But actually that's also to do with the fact that and this may be a heresy, there just aren't that many playwrights that know how to write for big West End houses. Mm. Jane Edwards wrote a piece in Time Out this week talking about how actors are not used to playing anything other than on television and in small black boxes. Also, there are a number of writers that have only written for theatres the size of the Bush and studio theatres. When Peter Hall ran his season at the Old Vic in the middle of the 90s, Dominic John Gould was in charge, who'd been running the Bush, brought all sorts of Bush writers to the Old Vic stage, and most of the plays didn't make it beyond the second row because the writers don't know how to write into a very big space. It's a completely different activity to write a play in the Bush where the audience is tiny and wrapped around, and you do plays in which people don't really raise their voices and they talk like this, to doing a show that actually has big enough ideas expressed dramatically and theatrically enough to really sell into a 1,000 or even a 1,500 seat theatre. And most of the problem with the West End, I believe, is that we've got the wrong theatres in the wrong places of the wrong shape, and they need dramatic restructuring.
Well, they've served us well enough for 100 years or so, but,
but
the ecology has changed.
Ago, you didn't have DVDs, video, exactly. And TV and cinema.
I mean, producers can only produce what's out there, and that's the problem, is that the stuff isn't out there. There was that new writing explosion that you referred to in the mid to late 90s. Those plays aren't, for whatever reason, aren't coming through.
I disagree there. I think there's one thing that's been absolutely extraordinary that it missed, which is the Roy Williams play at the World Court.
Fallout.
Terrible title. I think that might be part of the trouble. I can never remember what it's called. But that seemed to me to get absolutely to the heart of black-on-black violence in England today. Mm. It was riveting. It was a great public play. It would have absolutely filled one of those theatres. And none of the producers touched it. And it had fantastic reviews, and it was also, it was doing something which very rarely happens. It was getting a black audience as well as a white audience. Mm. It was absolutely a play that defined one of the major issues of today. It was also a young writer who'd been must have done half a dozen plays, finally getting one that absolutely worked. And it ran for, 5 or 6 weeks at the Royal Court. And I reckon all the producers, they were too scared to touch it. It was a black play, and they thought, we won't get an audience, but they should have had some faith in it, and it would have done very well at the Duchess or somewhere like that.
I mean, I've heard people at the Royal Court and also elsewhere around the UK saying that commercial producers are risk averse almost by nature now, and they won't take the risk.
I don't want to sound like Uncle Tom, but actually I do have some sympathy for producers. I mean, yes, of course, the problem is that they are risk averse. Yes, of course, we would love to see them not put in a TV star into a cheaply done revival of a terribly safe play. It would be great if someone said, I shall ban all revivals. We're only going to do new work in the West End, because the tourists would then have to go and see new work and they'd be less frightened of it. But actually, you're talking about people's money. I mean, the wage bill, even for a relatively small cast play, is staggering. If you haven't got people going, if you're not making your break, if you don't make the enough money per night to pay your bills, you can lose money like it's going out of fashion. I mean, it's extraordinarily expensive, and that's why they're risk averse.
But does that mean that, in effect, the culture's changing? It's getting more and more expensive, and maybe the culture has been shifting generally, and that the audiences that we need to attract, either because they can't get into London or because they can't afford the prices that are being flung around. I mean, that actually the culture is shifting. The West End will ossify, and that we've got to get used to that.
It becomes, like on Broadway, a kind of tourist destination, a Disney theme park, if you like, is what's happened there. But American Broadway is still thriving. Of course, shows not for
new plays.
No, but it never has. It hasn't been receptive to new plays for 20 or 30 years now.
Yes, but the thing is, although Broadway's got a buzz and a bit of glamour about it, actually, if you go to New York, there is nothing like as much to see as there is in London. And actually,
because they don't have the National Theatre.
They don't have
a
National Theatre. We've got the Court, we've got these very good fringe theatres, and we've got the National Theatre, and soon the RSC will be back in London again. I think that might be helpful. If they're going for a West End house, and that wouldn't be a surprise if it was back at the Aldwych, and then 20 years on, they're back in exactly the same theatre they left 20 years ago. But I don't know. I think that what worries me about these real cheapo shows that they put on, as David was saying, just to keep the theatre open, to sort of keep it warm, is I think they corrupt taste.
I agree.
That's what I think is really dangerous about it. Once you start going to things like Stomp, which is rather good, or The Catalans, which is dreadful, you don't want to go and see a play that contains argument, makes you think. You don't want to see something that hasn't got music in it. You just want a nice night out. Mm. And I think these producers are cutting off their nose to spite their face, basically. They're playing safe, which will mean they have to play more safe and more safe. And the whole thing about producing is it's risks. And what we really need, and what's not happened, is there's been no one since Michael Codron who's really out there dedicated to straight new plays and then putting them onto the best of his ability. That's gone. That's gone. They're all kind of magpies now.
I mean, and Sonia Friedman started out that way because she really, once she left the National, she ran New Ambassadors, which was absolutely going to be solely dedicated to short runs of new players.
Yeah, and what's happening now?
And actually, you know, she's...
Well, she's gone down the star route of producing players that just have some huge stars in them.
Presumably she would legitimise by saying, yeah, but I'm getting stars in to do quite interesting David Mamet plays or whatever else.
Or very bad David Williamson plays up for grabs.
Is it that by introducing this concept of stars as a kind of almost a prerequisite for attracting audiences, you then become a hostage to your own fortune? You can't then produce a play on the basis of the writing.
But you have to give something to make somebody part with £40. There has to be something, and that's the Madonna factor or the
Kristen Scott Thomas factor. I think, you know, ticket pricing is the other thing we haven't talked about, but that absolutely has to come into the equation. It's very interesting that the Nicholas Heitner £10 travel act season at the National has been so successful, because it's proved a point, which is actually if you charge people a tenner, they'll take a risk. Charge people a tenner and they'll go and see stuff, and actually they'll probably come back again. Yeah. Whereas even if you have a great time, Kristen Scott Thomas was sensational in Three Sisters, whatever you think of the production, but actually it was £40. You're not going to do that again and again and again to develop a taste.
But Heitner's done that with subsidy and sponsorship, exactly, which the West End doesn't have.
I mean, I feel sorry for the commercial producers. I mean, exactly. I mean, they can't compete with what Heitner's doing, can they? They simply cannot compete. And that really raises a lot of interesting questions. I mean, is what he's doing at the National, I mean, we would thoroughly approve of it, but is it actually good for the wider ecology of the theatre? I'm not so sure it is.
Well, but he would presumably argue that it is, because it's getting more people interested in theatre, end of story, and I think that's a legitimate thing.
You could say, it's like, I always think it's like the Paul Hamlin Association, or whatever it's called. Mm. It does sort of free concerts at the Royal Opera House once a year, I think it is. So people can go and see opera and ballet for free. Strikes me it's not much dissimilar to offering children bags of heroin outside the school, you know. They get hooked on it and then they can't afford it. And it strikes me as being a really, really strange way of going about things. You know, it's like giving people a little glimpse of this wonderful world they could live in, if only they got £100 for tickets.
Mind you, better to get a little glimpse than no glimpse at all.
Yeah. Well, this is an argument which, unlike many of the shows in the West End at the moment, will run and run. Charles Spencer, Mark Shenton, David Benedict, thank you very much.